Sports and Wine. I'm Katie.
And I'm Martha.
And we're here to talk some sports. So starting off with tennis, Novak Djokovic, the world number one in men's tennis, is winning everything. But instead of celebrating his greatness, the recent winner of his sixth Miami Open title this past weekend, some are painting the Djokovic era as boring and bad for the game. Why are so many people put off by his dominance and describe it as being boring and bad?
Well, first of all, let's talk about Djokovic and his recent dominance. He has won four of the last five Grand Slams and his 28th Masters title this past weekend, defeating Kei Nishikori of Japan. Now, the Serbian athlete, he leads the ATP tennis rankings with 16,540 points, and that's more than double of world number two Andy Murray, who sits at 7,815, and Federer's 7,695. And Djokovic, sorry to say here, folks, for all the Nadal fans, he has triple the points of Rafael Nadal, who has 4,955 points. And there was a comment that was made by Wimbledon finalist Pat Cash, and he mentions, you know, when you see Rafael Nadal and Novak Djokovic compete in a final, it's not boring, what he said, but basically it's mundane to watch the same tactic in every single match of every single Grand Slam for the last 5 or 6 years. And he says that, okay, this is going to be 2 hours of baseline rallies. The one guy who will outlast the other one is going to win. And he basically mentions that a lot of the skill out of tennis, there's a lot of skill that's out of the sport of tennis. So this is Wimbledon finalist Pat Cash. And so in terms of that comment, I disagree. Novak Djokovic, he's definitely not boring. He's got a lot of the shots in the book. He does a pretty good job tactically on the court as well. And I think he's good for the game. He raises it obviously to the next level. I won't disagree with the fact that maybe if the matchup were him and Federer, I would be more interested, obviously. But I will say that when Nadal plays, for example, especially more so in the past, he used to have a lot more of the long rallies and try to outlast his opponents by running every ball down. And I definitely respect that as a fan. But I think also in another sense, you do maybe want to see a little more action. So you do want to maybe see a little more variety in the game. Someone coming up to the net, serving, volleying, slicing, drop shots. And Djokovic definitely has all these shots. So I don't see him being a bore to men's tennis for the fact that he's winning. I think maybe to speak more eloquently about it, it's tennis is in transition right now. Djokovic is going to be 29 this year. Federer is 35. And I hate to bring age into the equation. And I hate to say it, but the baton has been passed to Djokovic. And maybe what's happening now is it took a while for fans to warm up to the fact that, you know, Federer had dominated and taken the stage from a previous generation of Pete Sampras and Andre Agassi. It took a little bit of warming up for people to appreciate Federer. And maybe that's the case with Djokovic too. But I would never say that it's boring, because Djokovic is anything but a boring player.
What do you think the age should be to retire from tennis? I've always thought about this. Like, I don't know what the appropriate age would be.
That's a good question. At the end of the day, it comes up to the athlete, what age. Obviously, when you're going 34, 35, I hate to say it once again, but you're looking at maybe a possible one or two more years.
Yeah.
You don't see many players out there who are 36, 37 and dominating by any means.
Or 45.
Exactly. So, you know, as you get older, obviously these younger guys, I mean, you may have the experience, but these younger guys are going to come out blasting. They're going to come out with nothing to lose, you know, with that kind of mentality. So, I mean, I don't know how much longer Federer has. And obviously, I'd love him to play forever. But, you know, we don't live in that kind
Serena
of...
Serena Williams will be playing forever. She'll be like 45 and smacking it down the court.
Serena Williams, yeah, she is a tough lady, definitely.
So with Sunday's win in the Miami Open, Novak Djokovic passed Roger Federer in career prize money. Is this a big deal?
Well, since we are on this topic, I'll give you the stats. Djokovic has $98.2 million for his career, and that's just above Federer's 97.9 million.
Damn.
So yeah, that's a figure that it's obviously very, very high, not separated by much, but it basically means that Djokovic will become tennis's first 100 million man while also being the sport's all-time leading earner. Now, the main reason to account for this is the fact that there has been a quick increase in prize money. So I'm going to give you a few examples here. Roger Federer won the 2004 U.S. Open. He took home $1 million. And now in 2005, Federer beat Andy Roddick and received $1.1 million. Fast track that to 2014, the prize money has tripled. And basically in 2015, Djokovic won $3.3 million. So you're looking 2015, $3.3 million for Djokovic, as opposed to 2004, $1 million. So the main increase, that's the main reason, is there's a big increase in money. And now if you're asking me whether or not I care, I will say no. Because why are we talking about who earns more? Let's talk more tennis, okay, Katie?
So just like Djokovic, Victoria Azarenka was the winner of the Miami Open and Indian Wells. And in Indian Wells, she defeated Serena Williams 6-4, 6-4. Is this a new Victoria Azarenka? Do you see her challenging Serena more this year and taking the throne from the queen of tennis? And also, is Serena's WTA number one ranking in danger?
Well, personally, I think Azarenka has always been a tough opponent for Serena Williams. Maybe not so much, obviously, in the beginning of her career in 2008. But I definitely think in 2013 and 2015, when she was healthy and with no injuries, she definitely gave Serena a good run for her money. And in 2015, I'll just give you a little bit of the stats, hopefully not boring you too much here, but they played three times, Azarenka and Serena Williams. They played three times, and it was very close. It was all in three sets, and this was in the Madrid Open, French Open, and Wimbledon quarters. And so, like I said, it wasn't just Serena beating her 6-2, 6-2, or something like this. It was very close three sets. Now, Azarenka, she's become the only third player after Steffi Graf and Kim Clijsters to win the Indian Wells and Miami double in the same year. So that's giving her a ranking right now, currently sitting at number 5 in the world. She's jumped quite a lot of spots. And Serena Williams, obviously we know she's dominated women's tennis for a long time, but for the last 7 months, Serena has not won a title. And that's been her longest drought since 2012. And I will by no means doubt that she is a queen of tennis. She definitely knows how to perform under pressure, and if she's healthy, she's unstoppable. Head-to-head, Serena dominates Azarenka 17-4, so that's obviously pretty big, but I will say, like I mentioned before, the last three times they played in 2015, it was very close, and I hate to bring the matter of age into play, but once again, I'm going to go there. Serena is 34 and Azarenka is 26, so if I'm doing my math correctly, that's 8 years difference. And, you know, like I said, if Azarenka is healthy, I think she's definitely one of the main players that's going to give Serena a lot of trouble in the future.
She's definitely coming for the crown if she's 26 and Serena's 34. Like, that crown's going to be snatched.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. Like I said, as you get older in tennis, you're not as fast. Like I said, experience is a great thing, but you're not as fast and not as quick as these younger players. And in terms of the ranking, when you asked about that, Williams leads the WTA field with 9,505 points, exactly. But she'll lose 880 of those points after failing to defend her title in Miami. So when the new rankings are out, which is right now, like I mentioned, Azarenka is top five for the first time since May 2014. And Kerber, Angelique Kerber, if you all remember her, she won the U.S. Open last year, beating Serena Williams. And she's going to return to number two, and she's going to be within 2,600 points of Williams. So she heads into the clay court season. This is Serena Williams heading into the clay court season with 4,000 points to defend at the French Open and Wimbledon. So the pressure is definitely on. And just to make it very basic, when you win a lot of titles, you basically lose points if you don't defend winning that title the next year. So you kind of have a lot to lose. And like I said, Serena is very close with the number two. So the bigger the year you have, the harder the potential fall, to put it basically.
And whatever happened to Venus Williams? I feel like we're always talking about Serena.
You know what? I'm not too sure myself. I know that Venus is the older sister.
Yeah.
She has had a lot of injuries, and I haven't seen much of her out there. But I know that, you know, she also has another... They've done their own fashion and things like that, outside of tennis. But hopefully we can see...
Venus is the nicer sister.
Yeah, apparently that's what they say.
She gave me a towel the first time I ever went to Rogers Cup. She's like, here, hand me a towel. And she walked into me. No, I walked into her and she apologized to me. I was like, whoa. We're both standing, like, waiting to go into the arena area. She's nice. Whoa. Compared to Serena.
That's awesome. If you got a towel from
her. I still have the towel.
Well, I hope you didn't wash it.
I did. I definitely
did. No, I'm joking. Yeah, you needed to. Yeah, definitely.
So Eugenie Bouchard has first round loss in Miami about a week ago. Do you think she is back from the 2015 slump? Because we witnessed that at the Rogers Cup this year. She was out pretty fast. I think we were both disappointed too.
Yeah, she ended up losing pretty early on. And I believe she lost to Belinda Bencic in three sets. And Belinda Bencic ended up being the winner. So it wasn't just anyone. But I will say, despite Jeannie's first round loss in Miami, I do think Jeannie has been improving compared to 2015. Because I'm going to be honest, who could have a worse year than Jeannie in 2015, okay? But everyone always goes a little bit crazy. You know, they're always looking for a story when she loses first round. And they start questioning, oh, is this the Jeannie from last year? I'm not going to lie to you, a first round loss is never good. But I think she's not playing under the same pressure as she was, you know, 2 years ago when she had all those semifinal, final appearances. She did much more. And she's currently number 45 in the ranks. And I'll give you the stats here. She's improved her play, compiling a 15-7 record so far, which means more wins than she had in all of 2015, which was 14-19. So the stats show that she has improved. I'm not just saying it. And in terms of her game style, her second serve has always been kind of finicky. It's always been a weakness of hers. But her second serve percentage and the tie breaks as well, the percentage of that, it has improved. So that's a good sign. But she still suffers in the fact that she has the sixth most double faults on tour this season. And she averages about 2.9 per match. So hopefully we can see her decrease with that. Now, something that's a little bit optimistic for us who follow Fed Cup is that Jeannie is going to play the Fed Cup in less than 2 weeks, according to head Canadian coach Sylvain Bruno. And this is big because she hasn't played the Fed Cup in about a year. And today she won her match against Alexandra Dolgero of Romania. So that's another good thing. And it was in straight sets. So hopefully we'll see her win the next match and progress from there on. But it's so far, I think she's doing much better than last year. And that's all we can expect right now.
So just to keep on track with Eugenie, according to Yahoo Canada, Bouchard will be working with Nick Saviano, who was her coach of 12 years, and they split back in 2014. But during the Volvo Car Open, they're supposed to be working together again. What are your thoughts on that?
For those of you that have followed Eugenie Bouchard, she was coached by Nick Saviano for a long time, and she trained in his academy as a junior. Saviano... After their split, Saviano has coached American Sloane Stephens until the offseason, and he's worked with Samantha Crawford as well. But, you know, I'm kind of happy for this little reunion because she obviously had to reach out to him, and that's great maturity on her part, too. I don't think, obviously, they spoke much last year. She was going through a bunch of different coaches, and currently, she's with Thomas Högstedt, a Swedish coach, I believe. And he was her coach after the U.S. Open, after Jimmy Connors. And he's obviously not in Charleston now. But she kind of said that her current coaching situation is, and I quote, taking it week by week actually day by day. So we did see in Miami in the first round, she did have a bit of an issue, I guess, kind of with her coach Thomas. She was a little bit short and curt with him. She wouldn't kind of make eye contact. And he said something to her like, "You're going to win this match." And she basically snapped back at him and said, "That doesn't do anything." So who knows what the future holds. I am happy to see this reunion simply for the fact that she obviously is very comfortable with this coach. He helped her attain this level. He's known her for a long number of years. And I don't think that's something that it's easy, you know, with a coach and student kind of relationship. I think it's something that it's nice to have when you know someone, you can feel comfortable in front of someone and just be yourself. And hopefully, like I said, they work again down the road. And it would be nice to see that. But you know what? She's keeping things pretty vague for now. So we'll just have to wait and see in the future what happens. We did some Pinot Grigios last week. Okay, forget the Pinot Grigios. It's all about the Pinot Noir, okay? We're going red wine this week. Forget the white wine. Okay, we're going to go for the wine that stains your teeth, okay? So it's Oyster Bay Pinot Noir from New Zealand. And Katie is going to tell us a little bit more about this.
For you red wine lovers, this is 13.5% alcohol. It goes for $19.95 at your local LCBO store. It's a dry wine, medium-bodied and fruity, and it's good with pork and salmon. So whatever you prefer. It seems like all wine goes with like seafood or fish.
You know what? I'm not going to lie to you. I'll probably drink any wine.
I know,
me too. I'll say everything is good. I know there's a certain technique when you go to wineries that you have to waft the wine. You have to twirl it. Take it by the stem. And you know what? I just...
drink it.
Just drink it. Forget it. Forget
don't
the process.
Spit that wine out. That's a waste. You're wasting alcohol.
Exactly. You know what? Wine is wine. And hey, I'll take it. As long as it's not barefoot. I'm not a fan of barefoot. Oh, yeah. Careful.
Or California. Two oceans. Those ones are gross.
Yeah. Sorry, guys. But we're not going to be talking about your wine.
No.
In a good way. So now we're going to go into some total divas action. And
which goes good with some wine.
Yes, it always does. And this is the beautiful reality show, WWE, Total Divas. These are women wrestlers. We're very enthralled by how they are businesswomen and very fit and very independent, these kind of athletes. So in the most recent episode of the Total Divas, there are the two sisters, Nikki and Brie Bella, and now they're looking to create their own bra and panty line. As we know, wrestling or sports or it's not forever. So you have to kind of find another way to keep yourself going. And they wanted to create this line. It's called Birdie Bee. And we saw Brie in the episode wanting to learn how to sew. And Nikki was more interested in investors and hiring others to do the work. And I wanted to kind of ask your opinion. Do you think it's better for to do it that way? And also, do you think like Nikki is a better businesswoman than Brie? You know, Brie was it was shown in the episode. Brie was trying to make some clothes and she ended up making some granny panties or some, you know, Depends or something there. And do you think Brie's a little bit unreasonable with this?
Well, first off, these girls are so lucky that they don't only get to do the WWE. They can, like, branch off and use it as a platform to give them so many more opportunities.
Absolutely.
And speaking as a twin, I feel like Brie and Nikki, they're just going to clash. They're always going to clash. It's never going to be an easy, situation where they can both agree on something. There's always that one twin that's more stubborn than the other. So I feel like Brie was just being more stubborn because she's very environmentalist and she wanted to create the own content herself. But like she can't make all the product by herself realistically, because if they get large volumes of orders, how are you gonna sit at home and knit that by yourself? And we both saw how terribly she did at trying to make those booty shorts. Like, yeah, those shorts weren't even, they were lopsided, they weren't even proper. So I feel like Nikki is more business oriented. She knows what she wants to do. She knows what she needs to do. And she reaches out to the people that can help her. And then Bree is kind of standoffish, where she wants to do it by herself and have all of that experience just building it with Nikki. But Nikki knows better. So I think Nikki's definitely a better businesswoman for sure.
Yeah, it's nice, you know, that Bree cares that much about going, you know, doing the business and kind of doing it on her own and stuff like that. They want to participate in it. So I appreciate that. But at the end of the day, obviously, you know, they're too busy, it seems like, to do this.
And
at
the end of the day, sit at home and knit.
Knit, exactly. So, you know, there are people, like Nikki said, that are paid to do this and they know what they're doing. They're professionals in this. So that is the best thing to do. Now I have to ask you about our Canadian, Natty.
Love Natty.
I do like Natty very much. I appreciate TJ for what he has to put up with those cats.
I'm not a cat fan.
No,
so.
I'm not a cat fan, and I definitely appreciate that.
Imagine all the fur on their clothes. They go through every day.
I know.
It's like, hand me the lint brush, babe.
I know, definitely. Poor guy that he has to deal with that. But what do you think about Natty's attitude of being embarrassed by her dad? Would you personally be embarrassed by someone that was behaving that way?
You have to think about it. She's going into a situation where she was going on vacation with her family and then Mandy's family. Mm-hmm. So if you already know that your dad acts out, like she says that she feels like she's her dad's mom. Like that's her little kid she takes care of because he's pretty immature. He just acts in a way that maybe a dad shouldn't always act. Like there's not a lot of responsibility there. But I feel like if I was Natty, I would be skeptical about the way that he would act in front of Mandy and her family because I wouldn't want them to think, oh, this guy is just a complete out of control type of person. Mm-hmm. But I think she overreacted.
I do too. You know what? I actually thought it was kind of funny. I think, you know, when her mom was getting the massage and he kept calling the massage therapist Norman Bates or something like this. He kept saying, oh, don't massage her bum. I think it was hilarious. I'm not going to lie to you. I think he brought a lot of, he has like a lot of personality, you know?
Yeah.
He didn't want to row during the rowing competition.
He didn't row.
He just sat there. He just taking up space, you know? I thought it was hilarious. You know, even when he went fishing, he was getting upset that he didn't catch all the fish. I love that kind of you know, that mentality. He was fine with that. So I think she has an awesome dad. I would definitely not be embarrassed by him, but it's tough. And I think that kind of falls on her. The simple fact that she invited someone that she's not 100% comfortable with to go on vacation. And I think that was the majority of the problem, is that she doesn't really know Mandy that well. And of course, you know, you're skeptical. Hey, how's she gonna view my dad? But I thought he was hilarious.
But even back to when the mom was getting massaged, it's so cute to see how much he's still in love with her.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's like, don't touch my wife there. Yeah. Don't massage her butt. Like, stay on the shoulders. Like,
absolutely.
So angry. And it's just so cute to see they're still like that.
Yeah, no,
there's
definitely
still people like that.
That does exist, it seems like, still.
Yeah, but rekindling Mandy started a little bit of nonsense. She tried to step in and get her parents back together after they've split up. Have you ever been in a situation maybe with parents or friends trying to get them back together?
Absolutely not. I stay out of all that drama. You know what? I don't want to get in there. I'm going to be straight up honest. And I wish everyone the best. And if it's meant to be, it's meant to be. But I have too much stuff going on in my life to go out and have even more stuff going on in other people's lives. You know what I mean? To go through that effort to create even more stuff, more controversy, more issues. So I have not been in a situation like that. And I don't think, I hope I'm never in that situation again.
It just seems like a sticky situation, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Stick your nose in someone's business.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever done that either. No. My parents have been together since they were in grade 6. I feel like that's something that makes me open my eyes and like want something long lasting. And I would never if someone ends something, they're ending it for a reason, and you're not in that relationship, so it's not really your spot to be like, hey, listen, get back together. We need you guys together.
For sure, for sure.
But I understand where she's coming from because it's her parents. That's all she knows, you know what I mean? They're together for like 35 years. She wants them back together. But they need to explore on their own. They can't have their daughter trying to mend their relationship. It's just awkward.
It is for sure. And as we kind of conclude with Total Divas, next week's episode, we see that Paige has a huge secret, and kind of boggles my mind, I'm not gonna lie, because I'm trying to think. I know they mentioned that she was gonna be on Conan O'Brien, so she couldn't go on the show. So she couldn't go on the to the baby shower, to Rose's baby shower. But Paige, it seems like it's something obviously huge. It's a huge secret. So what do you think it could be?
Is she pregnant?
That's honestly, I went through that one too.
I have no idea, because she just seems like such a little crazy, outrageous person. I have no idea what it could be.
Yeah.
When serious stuff happens to her, I'm like, oh, it can't be that serious.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It could be a pregnancy. That would ruin her career, though. Well, not ruin, but it would like put a halt on her career. And I feel like she's pretty high up in the divas right now.
She is, definitely. You know what? I'm thinking they're probably exaggerating this.
Oh, yeah. You know how reality shows do that.
So
I have another question for you about divas. It's just a random question. At the beginning of every episode, they show a quote.
Yes.
And the quote isn't from like a famous philosopher. It's from one of the divas. How do you feel about that? Because I feel like it's kind of unnecessary.
I do too. I think it's something that after so many seasons, they kind of wanted to change and maybe bring some more, I don't know, make it different, some more excitement to the show. So I think maybe that's what they're trying to do. I'm not crazy about it, but at the same time, it doesn't bother me because it's just on there for a couple of seconds.
It's true.
So yeah, these are obviously not, these are quotes that are used within the show. So, you know, maybe in a way you look at the quote and you're like, oh, I wonder when she's going to say this, right? But at the same time, it's like, it's not something that's deep.
And then you hear it and it resonates with you. You're like, oh.
Yes, this was not that important. Yeah,
exactly.
This was, yeah. It's not like, you know, if all of you know and watch Criminal Minds, there's a quote in the beginning of Criminal Minds and a quote near the end. And that actually goes with the show, and it gets you thinking about other things. And so there's some quotes there that I even use for myself. But yeah, these are obviously not life quotes. These are not things that you use. It's just kind of part of the show, right? About Total Divas and all that drama. Let's go into some basketball. And I have to ask you, Katie, I've been hearing some stuff, but I want to hear from you. Who's going into the Hall of Fame?
Former NBA star Shaquille O'Neal and Allen Iverson head the 2016 class at the Basketball Hall of Fame, which is so cool. I love Allen Iverson. Already thought Shaquille O'Neal was in the Hall of Fame, but he is now. They're joined by longtime Michigan State coach Tom Izzo and NBA star Yao Ming and WNBA star Cheryl Swoops and Jerry Reinsdorf. So Shaquille O'Neal was the top overall pick in the 1992 draft and was a 15-time All-Star who was the NBA MVP in 2000 and three-time NBA Finals MVP, which is a major accomplishment for sure. Obviously, you've heard of Shaquille O'Neal. You're not very into basketball.
I'm not a hardcore into basketball, but I know he is hilarious.
Yeah.
And yeah, he's on the show with Charles Barkley and Kenny Smith and EJ, as I hit my laptop, and EJ as well.
Yeah, he's a sports broadcaster now, and I feel like he adds a lot of knowledge to the conversation when he's talking to all of them.
Of course, yeah. And he's got a great personality. I enjoy kind of watching that more for the fun and the humor that they bring
absolutely.
To it.
But Iverson was an 11-time NBA All-Star who was named Rookie of the Year in 96-97, very long time ago. Izzo led the Spartans to the national championship in 2000 and has taken his team to the Final Four 7 times, which is amazing as well. And Swoops helped Texas Tech to a national title was a three-time WNBA MVP and won three Olympic gold medals. Not any of these other people have won those gold medals. I feel like that's a major accomplishment.
Absolutely.
And Yao Ming was the top overall pick in 2002 and was an eight-time NBA All-Star for the Houston Rockets. And Reinsdorf has been the owner of Chicago Bulls for more than two decades, which is insane.
Well, there you go. Hall of Fame.
They made it.
They did it. Now, I have to ask you, a lot of people have been going crazy about March Madness, and last night there was evidence of that. So why are people going crazy about this? What happened?
I feel like March Madness is almost a hobby for a lot of people too, because they do their little
brackets.
Pools and brackets. Yeah, and they just
a lot of
love
the
March Madness.
Unathletic people who've never played sports do that. Yeah,
they
absolutely love
to waste their money on this.
Yeah,
I know a lot of people that bought tickets for the final game and just prayed and hoped that their team made it into the final game. They didn't know it was going to be the Wildcats or the Tar Heels. They just bought tickets and hoped.
Well.
But fans of Villanova Wildcats and North Carolina Tar Heels are still in shock at the exciting finish to last night's championship game in Houston. The Tar Heels tied the game with 4 seconds remaining, only to see Chris Jenkins of the Wildcats hit the game-winning three-pointer at the buzzer, which is always a shock for everyone. The championship is the second for Villanova to go with the one back in 1985 over Georgetown, which is before I was even born. This morning, Jenkins told CBS News that he was up all night and his only memory of the moment was being tackled by his teammates. So I guess as a sports player, you're in your last game and you take that shot and you get it in, you kind of black out because of all the adrenaline. You don't really remember. And then you watch it back on TV, you're like, yeah, I did it.
Yeah, I guess he was in the zone.
Yeah.
He had to be if he did that. Tell us a little bit more what happened in the game last night.
This was one of the greatest championship games. So it came down to one shot, and Chris Jenkins obviously seized that moment. The Villanova junior forward canned the game-winning three-pointer at the buzzer to send Nova to its second national championship with a heart-stopping 77-74 victory over North Carolina, which is crazy. That's such a tight score. If I was in the audience, I would be freaking out.
I did see pictures of people before and after,
yeah,
losing their minds
because you think your team's gonna win, right? And then they get that one point and they're like no. But Jenkins said afterward that he believes every shot he takes is good, and this one was no different. But come on, it was the winning shot. I would be boosting that. There's something about playing in the national title that brings out the best in Villanova. The second-seeded Wildcats erased a 5-point halftime deficit to win their first national championship in 31 years. It may not have been as flawless as Villanova's upset of Georgetown in 1985 or its 44-point semifinal performance against Oklahoma on Saturday, but the Wildcats were poised and plenty good enough to play to deny North Carolina its sixth national title. So North Carolina's Marcus Page had just tied the game with an off-balance three-pointer with 4.3 seconds left. But Ryan Archidiacona got the inbounds pass at midcourt quickly and fed Jenkins for the winning basket. Phil Booth led Villanova with 20 points, but Ryan Archidiacona scored 16 and was named the tournament's most outstanding player. Jenkins added 14, but owns the three-pointer that will forever go into Villanova basketball history. And as Nova coach Jay Wright said of Jenkins winning the shot, Chris lives for that moment. So I think he was kind of downplaying that every shot matters. He wanted that shot, and he went for it.
Well, that's you'll go down in the history books for that one.
Oh, yeah.
But say that name for me again. Ryan what?
I can't do it.
Okay.
Archidiacona, something like that.
There you go. You got it. That is quite the name.
I know, right?
Quite the last name you got there. Well, going on from college basketball, now we're going to talk about a little bit about Toronto sports, okay? And obviously, we're going to go into the Toronto Raptors. And they need to win tonight. Why is that?
The Raptors need to win because Cleveland can take a big step forward towards wrapping up the NBA's Eastern Conference Championship tonight. And do we really want LeBron to win the whole thing? I don't think so.
Nope.
So the Cavaliers, who are in Milwaukee, start the day with a 3.5-game lead over Toronto, and the Raptors are home to Charlotte. The Cavs will have 4 games left in the season following tonight's action, while the Raptors will have 5. So they need to win for sure. Toronto's opponent tonight needs a win as well, as the Hornets are a 1/2 game out of first place in the Southeast Division, tied with Miami, my favorite team, for 2nd place behind Atlanta. The Hawks are in action tonight as well with a home game against Phoenix, while Miami is playing host to Detroit, a team still in the hunt for a low-seed playoff in the East. The Golden State attempts to keep its hopes of breaking the single-season win record alive, which we talked about last week, with a win at home tonight over Minnesota, but we'll see. The Warriors enter the game with a record of 69-8. The Warriors are chasing the 1995-96 Bulls, who finished 72-10. So the Warriors will have 4 games left after tonight, which is so crazy. I feel like basketball season went by so fast.
It did, but tell me more about your favorite team, Miami. Why are they your favorite team?
I love Miami. I feel like I've loved them for a long time because of Udonis Haslem, so I'm not a bandwagon fan. But when it was Chris Bosh, Wade, and LeBron, they were the dream team. They were constantly winning. They barely ever lost games, and they just made the team so good. Like, when Chris Bosh played for the Raptors, he was amazing. But then he went to Miami, and I feel like he could show off his talent so much more. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the right mix.
And how can you not like Miami? It's a hot city. It's nice to go there. Will Smith has that song about Miami.
Okay, well, I hope you still like the Toronto Blue Jays.
Oh, yeah, of course. I love the Blue Jays. My parents love the Blue Jays, and I look good in blue, so.
All right, there you go. So how about them Blue Jays?
Well, the Toronto Blue Jays look for their 3rd straight win as they continue a 4-game season opening series at Tampa Bay. Toronto has won the first 2 games of the series by 5-3 scores, and Aaron Sanchez gets the start for Toronto while the Rays counter with Jake Odorizzi.
All right, well, that sounds good. Thanks for the update on the basketball and the baseball.
I'm sure we'll have a lot more to say about baseball as the season continues, and it just started. We hope to catch a game ourselves. Maybe we'll live stream it so you guys can see.
And maybe I hope to see another bat flip for sure.
Oh, yeah.
It's not like that didn't get any attention.
Exactly.
So that concludes tonight's session of Sports and Wine with Martha and Katie.
We'll be back next Tuesday to talk some more sports, of course. Maybe talk a little bit about the NBA Finals. Maybe do some predictions. Get Martha to do some predictions, even though she doesn't really know.
I will predict Toronto for everything.
That's a good answer. Thanks for listening. Club going up on a Tuesday. Got your girl in the cut and she choosy. Club going up on a Tuesday. Got your girl in the cut and she choosy. Club going up.